I am joined today with Ross Cullen, BMX youth superstar, who has travelled from, whereabouts you come from?
Stockport in Manchester.
Oh wow, good place that. So did you grow up around Stockport or?
No, so my family home's actually in Preston. That's where I've always lived. I was born and raised in Preston.
Yeah.
And it's only been in the past year and a half that British Cycling have had to move me up to Manchester, based near the National Cycling Centre as a full-time athlete. It's easier to live closer to where you train.
Yeah. So were you travelling every single day from Preston to Manchester?
Yeah, so when I left school, I finished high school and I went straight into work at Halfords. I did an apprenticeship there. And then during that, I was travelling to Manchester maybe two or three times a week for training. So it's a lot easier living up here.
Definitely.
It's instead of an hour motorway, it's just a 20 minute drive.
Is it like a little bit of a joyous trot?
It
down
is.
Down to work. Do you go every single day now? Or?
Not really. Our training varies week by week. Sometimes we could be in 5 days a week. Some days we could, some weeks, 3 days. It totally depends on what sort of training block you're in and where you're up to in that training block.
Ah, okay. What's a training block?
So we normally do, so throughout winter when there's no competitions, you just want to get as strong as you can, do a lot in the gym, and yeah, just use your time off wisely, and then as it comes closer to race season, you have different blocks to get your speed back, and maybe if you want to get a little bit lighter, a little bit faster. The volume of your training changes massively throughout the year.
So is it sort of all about nutrition and whatnot right now? Or?
Yeah, so there's a lot of nutrition. Maybe in our sport, it's obviously in sport in general and life in general, nutrition is really important. I've always been taught that since I was a kid. My family always ate really well. Always had to eat my greens, was no dessert if not. Just BMX in general, it's not as nutrition focused, I guess, as other sports, but don't get me wrong, like we have to make sure we eat well and we're hydrated, because you want to have low fat and be as strong as you can, basically.
Yeah. Do you have a favourite meal from this sort of season? Or?
At the minute, I'm pretty boring, really. I quite like a lasagna. But it's not the most nutritious.
I don't know about boring. Lasagna's
It's an ideal meal. But normally most meals for myself are just similar to chicken, either potatoes or rice and a load of veg.
Is there anything that you found is just like the key to building muscle, or if you're cutting maybe weight, is there anything that you found that you're eating that is just the way to go?
So I don't know if it's actually true or if they even work, but I swear by green tea. So I love every night I have a green tea, and I think it really flushes me well. And obviously it's full of nutrients either way. But for general day-to-day building muscle, I think just as much protein as you can. I try to eat a lot of protein in my meals, plus shakes and such as Greek yogurt, stuff like that. Just as much protein as I can eat, basically.
Yeah. That's the way to go. That's what everyone that comes in, they always say protein, protein, protein. Shakes, bars, they'll wake up, they'll have a protein shake, or they'll have a bar or something, and it's just like, that seems to be the way to go. So does it sort of vary? So say if I was maybe 9 years old and I wanted to go into BMX, and should my diet be protein, protein, protein? How would it change?
No, so I normally say, at a 9 year old, you're still a kid, you've got to have fun, as I was doing at that time. I think generally, no matter if you're in sport or without, obviously you should try and eat as well as you can. So I think just live life as a kid, do you know what I mean? Enjoy what you're doing. I think nowadays too many kids take the sport too seriously. At the end of the day, you can have aspirations and future goals to be an Olympian or a gold medalist, but you still need to go and have fun. It's the same with me. If I woke up every day and I didn't enjoy what I was doing, then it's simple, I wouldn't be doing it. I think as a kid, you just want to go out and have fun and eat your greens, that's it.
Yeah, definitely. Do you think there's a lot of pressure on children and teenagers?
I think it's getting more that way from sporting clubs and parents. Sometimes you do see a lot of pressure being put on. I know when I was a kid, it was a complete opposite. we fell into the sport oddly, and none of my family knew or did anything with BMX before. And then they just kind of let me do my thing, and I loved it, and it's just gone from there.
Mm. How did you sort of, where did the passion start?
So how I got into it was a bit of a weird story. So my dad had actually had a cycling accident himself, just on a road bike, nothing, just traveling to work. And on the way to the hospital one day, we passed the BMX track, and then we kind of seen it and thought, we'll go back. So we went back the next day on a cheap old mountain bike. I didn't have any equipment for it. And like most clubs nowadays, you can rent stuff there. So I started renting bikes, helmets. And then I remember a few months after, Father Christmas bought me my first BMX bike. And then from then on, I was just absolutely hooked. I started racing club races. The club noticed I had potential, and I was doing well. So I went on to regional, national, and then all the way up to my first world championships in 2011.
So that's a... That's a quick timeline, right?
Yeah, I think in BMX, some sports you can't officially do world championships until you're a certain age. But in BMX, I think maybe it's around 6 or 8 or something similar, and you have to qualify through doing nationals. But yeah, I kind of took to it quite quick. I guess I was naturally talented, and it just went from there.
That's just how it started. I mean, it is a bit of an odd story. So when you said a BMX track, is that like a pump track or...?
Yes, it's similar to a pump track, but a little bit bigger. Each track in a ratio of 8 riders on the start gate. And it's just whoever crosses the finish line first. People normally get it mixed up with skate parks and doing tricks. That's the first thing you get asked, but that's the other side of BMX. Like I said, it's quite niche, not many people know about it, but I think it's a slowly growing sport.
Yeah, definitely. I've seen a lot of biking and just similar disciplines over these past few years blow up.
Yeah.
I've seen a lot of mountain biking. There's so many people that are into that sort of thing. And I just think that I've got a few friends that are into like skateboarding, BMXing, but it's definitely something like a city sport.
Yeah,
you know. Do you think that a lot of cities have had an influence on it?
I think the main thing for BMX is track location. So unlike skate parks, you could say there's a skate park. Maybe you could have one 20 miles away from you, no matter where you are in the country.
Yeah.
Where BMX tracks, they're scattered around. They're not as frequent as say swimming pools or skate parks. So that's why not as many people get into it. But I think the big thing that's helped cycling as a whole has been lockdown. Obviously, we've been stuck indoors for a year. And I think mountain biking, especially, and road cycling, and some part of the BMX has blown up because it's been all over social media. But yeah, I think if you live near a BMX track and you stumble across one, that's a way to get into it. You can check where your local ones are on the British Cycling website.
All right.
And just get stuck in.
Is a BMX track the best place to start for someone that's not familiar with the sport? Or
yeah, so they're really welcoming. I don't think you go to any club in the UK and they tell you to not start. Remember, I was there as a 6-year-old on a cheap £80 mountain bike, razzing round. I think the best way is just don't be shy, just go on and. Obviously, you've got to be able to ride a bike. You've got to be able to have normal skills. But even if not, there's club coaches there that can happily help you out. So as long as you can ride a bike, I'd just say get going.
Where do you start then for track racing?
Do you mean
sort of just like what are the base skills?
Yeah. So like I said, when I joined, I literally used to nothing more than ride a bike as anyone else generally could.
Yeah.
Obviously there's a lot of jumping and manualing involved in the sport, but that's skills that you pick up as you go on. You don't have to be a superhero on a bike before you start BMX. It kind of all gets nurtured and learned as you continue in the sport. I think, like I said, you don't need any major skills. You just need to be confident, and if you're interested, that's all you need.
Definitely. Is it sort of the way that you get into it? Are you introduced to the track pretty quickly? Or because I know a lot of children or, you know, kids, they like to jump in. You know, they see like the big jumps or whatever, you know, you can take that. Do you think that people are introduced to that sort of that you know, the cooler features and things like that quickly, or how would you say that goes?
I think if you go on your own, and you're like I was, a young kid, then obviously you're going to go straight for them. You want to do what you see the bigger and the faster guys doing. But especially if you're on a coaching session, I think they'll always, it's about risk as well, don't get me wrong. It's quite a dangerous sport at times. So as long as whoever's at the club thinks you're ready to go on the track, then I think they'll send you straight in the deep end. There's no other way of getting around it, because when you start, you're most likely going to be going pretty slow anyway.
Yeah, definitely.
It's only when you get up to high speeds that it starts becoming an issue. Yeah.
So if I were going to go, say I'm, again, a nine-year-old, I'm going to a BMX club. You say you can rent everything, but if I wanted the, say, the essentials, what's like a starter pack, would you say?
So obviously you need a BMX bike. If you're starting out, you don't always need a BMX bike. If you're just going to the club, I guess you could really go on a mountain bike if you wanted. They're not made for it, but if you wanted to. BMX bike, and I'd say you need some good footwear. You need something with a good sole on. You won't want to go in flip-flops or anything like that.
Definitely not.
And for me, I was always covered in pads. So I had elbow pads, knee pads. You don't want any skin showing. So just longer pants, long T-shirt, and then a big old helmet with gloves. You have a full-face helmet, so similar to what you see motocross riders use. And then always gloves as well, because your hands are precious.
Yeah, protect the chin. Oh. Yes. And knees and knuckles and elbows. Wow. They are the most painful things to graze on planet Earth.
It's like if you've ever had a scooter hit you in the shins, that's the only thing that's worse.
That is an awful feeling. Or the ankle, like above the...
Above the just, bone,
It's an awful... I've actually had one of those hit me on my funny bone once.
Oh.
That is awful.
Well, I split my below my knee. I had to have stitches once. I never really rode scooters, but I tried someone's at the skate park. I managed to crash and ended up with A&E. So it wasn't ideal.
I found myself crashing at the skate park on my scooter a lot. It was... it was... I remember just going flat onto my face.
Yeah, harder.
I must have been maybe 12 or 13 at the time. Yeah. Probably 13, actually. I just remember going flat on my face, like proper, you know, like a real slam. And then I just remember wailing at this like massive skate park, loads of people there, just wailing. And I've never been back. That was the end of it. I was just the paranoia and just like, you got to build your confidence up. It's really, really, really hard to get over something like that. Yeah. Even you know, if you're just doing something small.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I went to, like, this mountain bike trail with my auntie. We rented bikes and helmets and stuff like that. Obviously, I've got no idea what I'm doing. They explained a couple of things to me. They said I knew a few things because I had a friend that was into mountain biking. And so I think it's called a berm.
Yeah.
Right. It was. It was. They're really hard to go around on the first attempt, and so it looks when you see them going around, you know, they might flick their back end out and then kick up some dirt or whatever. It's so much harder than it looks. It's crazy, and I just remember going down and I scraped all up my shin and onto my knee, and then from then I just wouldn't go up it.
Yeah.
Like, so, how do you gain your confidence back? And what's the worst fall that you've had to overcome as well?
So we've had, 2019 was the last race season I competed, was my last year in the junior men category before I went full-time as an elite. So I was actually going really well into that season, like you said, everything was going well as I wanted it to. And then at one of the first races of the season, I crashed on the second lap of practice. So I didn't even get to race. Blew my knee up, so I had to sit and watch one day racing. And like you said, although I was physically in pain, the other thing was confidence. And I think that your mind is such a powerful tool in not only in sport, in life. If you can have control over your mind, then you can do whatever it wants to do. But yeah, back to the story, I literally had to watch a day's racing, which is horrible when you're out in Italy going to compete and you're having to watch your age group go ahead. Wasn't good. But yeah, I got back to the hotel and just told myself, look, I'm going to race tomorrow. So I got painkillered up, loads of ice, and then I was good to go the next day, and got second in the European event, which was way better than I expected. But then that season was kind of a write-off. I crashed multiple times, and it did take a big hit on my psychological side. But I think just believing in yourself and knowing what you're capable of, that always pulls you back straight.
Yeah, definitely. You can always prevail if you've got that drive, can't you? It's just the psychological side and what... Because your mind plays games
100%,
all the time. Yeah. Like, just the paranoia of doing something again is enough, you know? Yeah. It can be in anything, though, you know?
Yeah, it's not just sport, is it? It's general life with anything. You get laughed at in school once, you ask a silly question, then you'll sit there all day not wanting to ask another question.
Exactly.
And that's a horrible thing, your mind will play games.
How did you build that fortitude to just get back out and, you know, continue going?
Yeah. I think it's built within the sport. Like I said before, it's quite a dangerous sport as such. And I think it's part of the nature of it. That's one of the things I love about BMX. Not only is it a good sport, it's just good life fundamentals in general. And that's one of the things it teaches you, is just to get back up and get going.
Yeah.
Because it's inevitable. If you start a sport, you're going to crash, you're going to hurt yourself. But that's part and parcel with any sport, really, isn't it? But yeah, I think parents are a big help. Well, they were for me anyway. When I was growing up, they was my dad, bit of a tough cookie, and he was always like, you know, just get up, come on. My mum was always the one that was making sure I'm all right. So yeah, I think it's built within the sport. It's just you get told to get up and crack on, unless obviously you're too injured to go.
Definitely.
But if you're physically good, then get back up and carry on.
Do you think it's built into the coaching style that a lot of clubs take on? Or?
Yeah, obviously can't really speak for it, because obviously coach to coach is whoever that coach is, he'll relay to you whatever he believes. But yeah, I think it is massively in training. So like my coach says, even if you mess up in an effort, instead of giving up, he says, like, pretend everything's the Olympic final, pretend everything's a race. What would you do in that situation? So... it's drilled into you constantly that you shouldn't give up. And then, like I said, I think you take that out into the wide world as well. And it's just a good life skill to have.
Yeah. So treat every race like it's your final one, or
it's a big race. Even in training, so say if you have a bad start in training, it's easy sometimes to let frustration get the best of you and just kind of to give up, roll back around. But instead, as he said, like, what if that was a World Championships final? You wouldn't just roll around and say, look, can we go again? you'd have to complete the race, so, yeah.
Yeah. Is that sort of something that you remember, like, when you're maybe in a race? Like, it comes to you if you make a mistake, perhaps?
Yeah, there's plenty of times it's more frustration, because the BMX lap's only about, on average, maybe 30 seconds long. So there's not much you remember during the race. It's highly adrenaline focused. So, but there's times I remember messing something up, and just it's more frustration than anything. Yeah. You're frustrated in yourself. But like I said, that drives you on to try and catch everyone up.
Yeah, of course. What's your favourite part of racing?
I'd say about the competing. I've always been quite competitive, and I enjoy working hard outside of training and seeing it kind of pay off.
Yeah.
Obviously, the favourite part about racing has got to be winning shiny medals, but you can't always do that. But yeah, just I love competing as a whole.
Yeah, so for maybe people getting into the sport, what would you say? Because obviously, winning medals is what everyone wants to do. It's the thing, you know, that you're striving towards. How would you say? Because maybe we've had a few people come here and be on the podcast, and they've been snuffed of something, or something's happened and it's had to be taken away from them. You know, perhaps. Case in point, I don't know if you watched the Formula One at all in Bahrain. Max Verstappen passed Lewis Hamilton to being first, it would have been a sure thing, you know, he would have won the race. But it was taken off him because he was pushed out of bounds by Lewis Hamilton.
Okay.
And so, essentially, you know, things like that can happen.
Mm-hmm.
What would you say to people that are, you know, if it does happen, if they do have their medal or their achievement, say, taken away because of something that they couldn't really control, how would you say to keep you cool, just sort of on track?
Yeah, so I guess as any kid, I always struggled with that. I think in BMX, you can get disqualified for the same things if you go over the line and the markings of the track. And things like you said in Formula One. But at the same time, I think I've always been I've always had a saying that you can't cry over spilt milk, or you shouldn't cry over spilt milk.
Yeah.
It's something my dad's always told me, and that's always been good for me. So, for example, at that race where I knew that I was in the best shape I could be, but then I physically couldn't ride, it was really frustrating. But then sitting there, you think, what can I do?
Yeah.
I think you should always just evaluate the situation you're in and just think, what can I physically do now? And if there's nothing you can do to solve it, then just take a step back. It's kind of not your issue if you can't do anything.
Yeah, it is what it is.
Yeah.
Type deal.
It is what it is. Just deal with it.
That's definitely something I could learn a little bit, you know, a little bit younger, instead of being, you know, a little sore loser sometimes.
Yeah.
Because sometimes it is what it is, and that's just how it is. Yeah. So, in BMX, I know that in mountain biking there's a lot of different disciplines, and there's a real, like, really wide range of different things that you can go into, different, like, miniature events and things like that. How much is there to do in BMX?
So, like I said, you've got the BMX freestyle, which is totally different. Like, the training, the bikes, everything is completely different.
Yeah.
Then you've got our side, the racing. And then they've also started bringing in, like, Red Bull are doing a pump track world championship, say. So you don't have to be BMX, you can be mountain bike or whatever you want. So that's another kind of side of BMX that's coming in. But like I said, I think it's quite niche. That's probably its problem, like, it doesn't grow. With mountain biking, they're so versatile. You can get a mountain bike, ride it to work.
Yeah.
Then you can go mountain biking on it, where you wouldn't really ride a small BMX to work, would you?
No.
But yeah, that's the main problem, I think, with BMX growing, is there's not too much in it. But at the same time, that's really good, because everyone that does a sport is hunting for the same one medal. It makes it quite exciting.
It's all really transferable between different events and things like that. You can just say you're maybe a freestyler.
Yeah.
You still have the skills to do racing. It's all sort of in there. There's obviously things that you should learn.
Yeah.
Because it's a different set of skills for both things, because freestyle and, you know, racing, they're two completely different things.
Yeah.
But the core skills are completely transferable. It's not like just riding a bike.
Yeah.
Really. There's a lot more to it.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
It's all, like you said, the hand-eye coordination or reflexes and all the general bike skills, even though as a freestyler you might not have the brute power and skill at the strength, sorry, to be a racer. You've got bike skills behind you. You see, I know a lot of people that I've raced with from around the world that have changed from BMX to mountain biking, because once you've got the borderline skills in BMX, they're transferable onto any other cycling discipline. Because I personally believe that BMX is one of the most technical disciplines.
Definitely.
You can do. So if you can master that, I guess you could. It's not that you couldn't just jump on a mountain bike and be the best at what you do. But with years of getting used to that discipline, I think you're pretty set to go.
It's definitely the most technical.
Yeah.
There's no doubt about that.
Yeah.
There's a lot of strength involved. You don't get gears on a BMX.
No, you can't get a gear, unfortunately.
So it's all just, you know, there's no easy way of doing it. No. You can't just go down a gear and then you can get up the hill. You know, it's just sort of like, there's a lot to it. So how do you keep speed? Because I'm familiar with slopestyle.
Yeah.
And they keep a lot of speed from, like, pumping and things like that up jumps. How, Is that sort of the same in BMX racing? Or?
Yeah, so it's pretty similar. So obviously where you can pedal, you'll pedal. And you're, that's using all the strength you've built in the gym and your sprint training. But I reckon for you might only pedal for sometimes not even 50% of the lap. You're in, like you said, rhythm sections or with jumps. And you've got to use your body to keep your momentum or build momentum by pushing up jumps or pumping them. You've got to work on the transitions and just generate speed wherever you can.
Yeah.
And that's like where we said, that's where the main skill of the sport comes from.
So going off, this is a different topic now, but what's in it for the future for yourself?
In general, BMX or...?
Just where do you plan, you know, where do you plan on going with it?
Lockdown helped me out a little bit because with the Olympics in 2020, I would have been my first year in elite, and I wasn't strong enough or fast enough. Basically, that was the that was that. But now it's this year; it's opened a few doors. So selection for that's going to be this year. So that'd be cool if I ended up there. But like I said, it was never a given. So it'd be nice if I had a potential to go to Tokyo this year. If not, the next like Paris Olympics, that's where I think my main event will be. I want to be peaking by then when I'm 24. But outside of sport as well, I think you shouldn't be too focused just on your sport. I've got to at least think about, you know what I mean, most BMXers retire at 30. There's no BMXers that go on up to like 40 or 50. There's potentials to go, say, onto like track cycling in the velodrome. But I thought about that question you just asked me back when I was in secondary school. Where do you see yourself going? And it's tough to admit, but BMX won't give you, well, most BMXers won't get a good enough income to kind of retire at 30. So I made sure I did pretty well in my GCSEs, and I've picked up a few trades since. So if needs be, I'm good to get stuck into a 9-to-5. But the plan is, hopefully I'd love to get a few Olympic medals, and then maybe continue in the sport.
Is it I forget the name, is it lottery funded, the sport?
So that's where we get our money through from British Cycling. And that's such a big help, like I said, because we're a lottery funded sport. Through UK Sport, it has so many pros. It means we can train as well as we do, live as well as we do, and travel to all the races and competitions. So we're forever grateful for that.
Yeah, gives you a lot of opportunities, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Sort of having that freedom, because there isn't much time between training and conditioning and all these other things that you've got to do to stay on top of your game, to work 9-to-5 every day.
I couldn't work a job. People normally ask me that. When I say I couldn't work a job, obviously you could if you wanted, if you're doing a small hour contract. But there's not a chance I could say work Monday to Friday 9-to-5 in offices. I wouldn't be able to be a full time athlete, basically.
Yeah. And that's sort of, well, that's what we aim to do here at Sports Champions, you know. Give you that freedom, because, you know, you can be funded by events that are free for schools.
Yeah.
You know, all it takes is fundraising and sponsorships, and that's it.
Yeah.
And even then, doesn't even, you know, we have the athlete part, we can fund you, even if, you know, if you travel to a deprived area that maybe can't give as much money.
Yeah.
We've always got that athlete part. It's, you know, peace of mind, isn't it, really?
Yeah.
But, so going forward, would you ever think of becoming a coach, perhaps?
Yeah, so I do a bit of coaching now. Within local clubs, and it's something I love doing. I basically see it as giving back to the BMX community as I got given it when I was younger. And I think that's really important to keep the sport growing and thriving, is to obviously the generation that are coming up, or the generation behind me, they're the next generation of BMX. Even not in BMX, in general life, I think there's a lot to learn from athletes that have been there and done it. As I speak to Olympians and people that have been through the system I'm going through, they've always, whatever you're struggling with, they've been through it and got over it.
Yeah.
I think coaching is a big role that I'd like to stay in after my career anyway.
How would you approach coaching? Like, what would be your focus?
So if it's obviously on the BMX track, I think if I'm working with younger athletes or people that are new, is just obviously learning the fundamental skills, but just having as much fun as possible. Like I said, you've got to love what you're doing, and that's when you ride your best. You know, if you come into work and you're not happy, you're never going to be productive, are you?
So
I think that's that. But maybe if I'm coaching in 10, 15 years' time, riders that are 20-year-old my age, you'd have to obviously be more specific to an elite athlete's needs. But a lot on the mental side as well. I've worked with a psychologist for 8 years now, since I was 11. Not because I think I'm mentally unfit, more because I believe that the mind, like we said, it's more powerful than we believe. You can be as physically strong as you can, but if you're not strong upstairs, then unfortunately not going anywhere. So I think that's a big way that people, especially nowadays, need help and guidance with is mental well-being.
Do you think it's important, say, so perhaps theoretically you were training for maybe 35 hours a week? Do you think it's important to take 4 or 5 hours just out to maybe meditate or just to chill out or see a therapist or a counsellor or anything, just to keep
Well, not even that. I think it's not only mine, a lot of people know, think this way, is that rest is more, or if not important, than your training. One, to recover physically and mentally. And two, you've got to have a social life. If I just trained, if I just trained every day of the week, didn't rest, I'd have no social life. I wouldn't be interested in anything else. You need something to do outside sport or even jobs or anything. You need something that you can kind of switch off to, that you can just kind of relax and let everything go.
Come home, just do it, you know?
Yeah.
What's that for you then?
Well, recently, since lockdown, I started playing a bit of golf, which I'm pretty dreadful at. but weirdly, I've not been competitive with it. I just enjoy playing, and like I said, as soon as I get out on the course, I'm not thinking about training or anything I have to do. It's a really good brain break, or even I can't wait for the day that we can go back to seeing family and friends properly, because I'm quite well family orientated. So like I said, just having a good social life and maybe finding a hobby that you're interested in, and you're winning.
Definitely. So it's just sort of through lockdown, I know a lot of people have picked up a lot of stuff, you know. People have picked up hobbies, they've picked up different, even professions. I've seen people, you know, just working from home. You know, maybe they've got an interest in arts and crafts, they're making resins or something that, you know. Is that really, really, you know, just that, because you mentioned not thinking about training, that the separation, is that really, really important, do you think?
Yeah, and like I said, once again, not only in sport but general life, if you put all your time into something, you're just going to blow up, basically. If I came home and I trained at home and all I watched on my TV was racing and training, and that's all I thought about, at the end of the day, I wouldn't be a good athlete. You need time. You know what I mean? Your brain's not a machine. It needs downtime as well as you do. I think you need to rest your mind as much as your body. Having something else to do outside, even if it's a separate job or something you enjoy, you should never drop them. They're really important to do.
And sleep too.
So, I'm a big sleeper.
Yeah,
I never used to understand. I've always slept well, don't get me wrong, but I've never really understood how important it was until I started training full-time as an athlete, and I was, I was tired every day of the week. And I realised that sleep is super important. People have different sleeping patterns, I guess, but for me, I need to kind of be asleep before 11 o'clock every night, or else I'm going to be yawning through the day.
Yeah, I know a lot of my friends have got pretty awful sleeping patterns and even habits. A lot of them watch TV in bed, maybe they'll fall asleep with their phone on, anything like that, you know, or they'll have, maybe they'll have lights on or something like that. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
One of them actually managed to flip time zones. He was in uni, managed to somehow work in. We worked it out, you know, as a group. We worked out that he was actually living in Fiji's time zone, because he was going to bed at 3 p.m. in the afternoon and waking up around, I think it was something like 2 a.m. or 1 a.m.
Like constant jet lag.
Yeah, constant. Yeah. And it's just, and his mood then, he wasn't getting any daylight. Anything like that, apart from when the sun, you know, the sun would rise and things like that. And he'd, you know, just, it really affects your mood and your productivity. Because I wake up, and if I haven't slept well the night before, I'm lethargic.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm moody. I just don't want to get on with things. And I think it's as, you know, as important as it is to an athlete, to yourself, to not be tired. It's important for everyone. You know,
like you said, your brain doesn't work as well. And it's tough nowadays, I think, in this generation. It is really tough, especially for kids. You've got televisions, you've got iPads, you've got phones, you've got iPods, you've got this and that going. And I'm a culprit for it yourself. You know, if you get scrolling on Instagram, sometimes you can get stuck in that for 10, 20 minutes.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's quite hard nowadays to detach from all the media, or say, televisions. So yeah, I think it is tough nowadays to have a good sleeping pattern. Yeah.
Do you have a strategy for sleeping?
I normally try to be in bed at least an hour before I actually try to go to sleep. I've never been one that I can just kind of get in bed and go to sleep. Whether I read or watch something for an hour, it kind of settles me down. But I know other people that are the opposite. They hate being in the room.
Yeah.
But yeah, I like getting settled for a bit. Because it takes me absolutely ages to get to sleep.
I think I'm a 5 minute sleeper, to be honest. It's a strange. Yeah, it's just like, as soon as I put my head on my pillow,
you're gone.
Yeah, there's like a weird, like, weary bit, like I'm a bit senseless for a little bit. Maybe my mind goes running, and that's when I know I'm gonna go to sleep. It's hard to explain. I don't really know what I'm saying right now. It's like, my mind goes off into a different space, and it's like all imagination, and then
flat out,
gone. Yeah. Like, and that can be for any amount of hours. Like, usually, it's really weird. I have this habit of waking up 5 minutes before my alarm, like, actually goes off. I don't know what it is, but maybe it's just that I don't need an alarm.
Subconsciously, you know it, yeah.
I don't trust myself, though. I'm never going to go without an alarm.
The day you don't need it, you'll always wake up.
Exactly.
But the day you need it, you won't do it.
Yeah. But even then, as much as sleep's important, the morning routine, waking up is also important.
Yeah.
So could you sort of take me through what you do each morning?
Yeah, so obviously when I wake up, I don't like sitting in bed. As soon as I'm up, I like to be active. So normally I wake up, get changed, go down and fuel well. I think breakfast is the most important meal of the day. So yeah, make sure I have a good breakfast, followed by a shower, get ready, and then I'm normally out. I used to, in high school, I used to have long hair. I spend ages doing my hair every day. Now I've resorted for a lockdown haircut, so it's so much easier.
Lockdown haircut.
Morning routine has gone down significantly in time.
Yeah. I wish I could say lockdown haircut. It's like lockdown hair growth now, isn't it?
Mine was the same, so I just attacked it with a set of clippers at home.
Oh yeah, who did it?
Just me and my housemate. Yeah.
Oh wow!
Yeah, so every 2 weeks I sit down on the dining chair, and my housemate says, "Come on." At first, the trust wasn't there, but slowly it's been a long year. I think he could work in a barber shop soon. He's getting better and better.
Not very patchy anymore.
No, it wasn't.
I had a few mates that did that in uni, and they're like, "Oh, they
not good.
Looked awful, like really awful," but. Going back to sort of breakfast, what's your favourite meal to have at breakfast? What's like, is there anything that's all encompassing as well that includes everything you need in a breakfast?
So my daily breakfast normally is, I have granola with Greek yogurt, a load of fruit, so strawberries, blueberries, raspberries,
yeah,
a banana, then with some seeds and nuts and honey on top. It seems kind of boring, but it's pretty healthy for you, and it's what I enjoy. If I'm trying to fuel for something, I'll just have a load of scrambled eggs, maybe 5 eggs scrambled. But yeah, I can't beat the fruit. I think it's quite refreshing in the morning. I like to wake me up.
Definitely.
And if they're a bit tangy, then even better. You're definitely getting woke up.
Yeah, I try and avoid cereals at all costs.
Yeah.
It's like a dessert every morning.
Yeah.
Can't really stand it.
I've never really been a cereal fan. Probably because my dad wasn't either. So
yeah.
As I grew up, I never really had Cocoa Pops or anything like that. It was always porridge or eggs.
Yeah, I think it's... A lot of people are getting onto that fruit and yogurt sort of thing, especially with nuts and things like that. People are leaving, and people are leaving them outside overnight.
Yeah,
and things like that. I think it's a better alternative, really, because you can't go wrong with fruit. It tastes nice.
Yeah,
like there's no real long and short of it. Just is fruit. You know, I'd pick a tangerine over a chocolate bar any day of the week, really.
Mm.
You know, but. I think that with stuff like scrambled eggs, it's easy to get carried away.
Oh, it is.
Like,
you go from having scrambled eggs to a full-blown English breakfast.
Yeah.
Normally I'm very strict, and if I don't buy it, I won't eat it. So if it's not in the cupboards, I can't eat it. I know some people, when I started living on my own and shopping, it was quite easy to think, I'll get that, but I'm not going to eat it. I'll just leave it just in case, and that's the biggest trap you can ever fall into. If you shop well, you're going to eat clean because you only have what's in your cupboards, right?
Yeah, and then you got to resist the urge to get in a car and then drive down to the shop or whatever. That's the worst. The willpower to not, you know.
I know, I'm quite good with that nowadays. There's only certain foods, weirdly, if I have lamb, for example,
It
gives me such a sweet tooth, like I really want something after it. It's really odd with some meals, but like I said, even fruit sorts out sometimes. You have some fruit afterwards and you're good to go. I know it sounds really boring and grown up, but I like to try and eat as well as I can.
Yeah.
Because you've got to fuel your body right.
So. Yeah, it shouldn't really be something that sounds boring and grown up, though. I mean, everyone should eat well from the get-go, I mean.
But don't get me wrong, you've got to have times where you've got to have cheat days, you've got to have cheat meals.
Got to pick out.
I'd be lying to you if I sat here and said I'd never eat chocolate ever.
Exactly.
I think every sports person in the world has to have a step away sometimes. Because like you said, you just blow up if not.
It's more about choosing not to.
Yeah.
It's not sort of really just being strict on yourself and saying no chocolate whatsoever, you know, never, I won't eat this again. It's just choosing not to. It's like I don't really fancy it, really.
You know? Get to that point, like you said, if you start having other alternatives, to say if you're having fruit every morning rather than a really sugary cereal, then you'll get to a point down the line where you'll actually think, look, I actually prefer this now than that anyway. And then obviously the choice gets easier.
It is, and you just keep on opting for the healthy option then, don't you? So, going back to BMX training, sort of went on a big tangent there, wow. So going back to training, there's, from what I gather, from what all of the athletes tell me, is a lot of it is nutrition, conditioning, a lot of stuff in the gym as well. And then actual like training for that event, you know, getting skills down, etc. So could you sort of break down every, because you mentioned blocks before, could you break down each block and just all of the different aspects of it? Like what are the four or five cornerstones, you know, pillars that you go by when training or keeping healthy and things like that? What's it like?
So for, if we start with eating on the topic, say if I know I've got 2 days of training coming up and I've got 2 sessions a day, what we call a double day, I'll know that I need to carb up more, so I need to eat more carbohydrates the night before or a few days before, to obviously make sure I have enough energy to go and do what I need to do. Where vice versa, if I know I've got a day off tomorrow, maybe I'll subconsciously think, look, I'll have maybe a bit less, but we burn so many calories even on just when we rest as athletes. it's pretty crazy. But yeah, the same with protein. I try and mm-hmm. eat as much protein. Doesn't really change. I try and eat as much as I can. It's just really the loading amount. So do you know what I mean? If you've got a weekend off, you won't eat as much, you won't load as much. Where if you've got a race weekend coming up, I'll normally fill my boots with whatever I can.
Yeah.
And then when you come to gym stuff, we do a lot of Olympic lifting. So a lot of kind of cleaning, they call it, or squatting, bench press, deadlift. It's basically trying to move as much weight as we can. Which I really enjoy that side of it as well. And that obviously builds up power, but saying, like I said, in winter we're doing a lot in the gym, maybe like four sessions a week. Where in race season, like now, I'm in the gym twice a week and the sessions are like an hour and a half long, where normally they can be up to 2.5 hours. So it changes, like we said, for block or into season. And general bike skills, it's just, they're pretty same throughout. You've got to keep, it's good to grow your skills as a kid, but you've got to keep on top of them. Like anything, it doesn't stay forever. We do a lot on the bike. And I found as I've grown up, obviously you get more sensible. As a kid, I'd be sending stupid jumps every day of the week. Where now it's, I know it's kind of my job, and reality hits a bit and you think, oh, maybe I shouldn't. It's like risk and reward. So yeah, training does vary. The main two blocks are, say, like off season and in season. So a simple way to put it is, off season we'll just get absolutely battered, we'll try and get as strong as we can, and then in season you've just got to try and feel as good as you can and get fast again.
Wow, you say that you forget bike skills. So that saying, you know, everyone says you can never forget riding a bike.
But the more complex stuff you can't.
Exactly.
If you don't stay in touch with stuff like that, then like anything, it's not as much you forget it, but like you say, it's confidence. If you don't keep within that every time you touch your bike, over time you can get less and less confident with it.
Yeah. So over the years, you spent a long time on a BMX. What's the one thing that you've taken away from it? You know, like, just what is, if you're going to encapsulate it, what have you learned from all the competitions, all the races, everything?
It's quite controversial, but it comes with what we're saying before. And it's literally the saying that somebody told me once when I'd gone from world champion in 1 year and won in Belgium, and then the next year in 2016 actually became second. Which obviously you're second in the world, don't get me wrong, that's amazing, but it was kind of going, and I was really upset. And somebody told me, look, you're just riding a small bike every day, that's it, it's just a bike race. And then, like we said before, that's kind of put it into perspective. It is amazing, and it's what we do as our job, but you've got to remember sometimes it's not the end of the world. If you lose a race, or if you do this and that, you're only riding, people call my kids bike because they've got small wheels, you're only riding the little bike around the world with you. So yeah, it's made me really grateful for how my life has panned out. Basically doing what I love every day is a godsend.
Wow That was much deeper than I expected it to be. So I mean, that's very grounding. That's, you know, really just, you know, brings the perspective down, you know, take off the rose tinted glasses sort of thing, you know. But I wouldn't say controversial.
No.
You know, it's just sort of, it is, you know, it's breaking it down, definitely, you know, pushing some boundaries there with the whole, you know, let's make something as simple as possible thing. But yeah, no, that's a good way of looking at it. It just, it promotes the separation, doesn't it? You know, that separation between work or racing and just life and living, you know, because then you don't want to take away the anger from maybe losing a race and then take it home, and then maybe be in a mood or even lash out at someone. You know, that's the last thing that you want to do, you know. But that's, I mean, that's some pretty good advice. Yeah. As mean as it sounds.
It's general life. Like anything you can say, that's a big saying for me. It is what it is.
Yeah.
I think a lot of people, especially this year, a lot of people have been saying that. Because at the end of the day, no matter what the problem is, if you put it into perspective, you've had a bad day at work. If you look at it really, it's one day out of your life that's not gone to plan. You get good sleep, wake up the next day and you're good to go.
Yeah. Wow. I think that's a good point to end it on, to be quite honest, because that is it's a powerful bit of advice there. So thank you for coming in and speaking to me. It's been a great time, actually. And when are you competing next, actually?
So we've just been announced yesterday. There's a race in 3 weeks, which is the European race, and then a World Cup the following week in Italy.
Mm-hmm.
So hopefully in 3 weeks. It's been about 18 months since I raced, but hopefully it'll be good to go there.
Hopefully then we'll be able to get, you know,
back on it.
Yeah. Back on the protein. Mm-hmm. And so how would I be able to watch the races?
So there'll be live streams. So on my social media, I'm sure I'll be promoting the race. And there's normally a live stream on YouTube of each event, which I normally share.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, if you're interested and you want to take a look, keep an eye on the social media and it'll be on there.
And that is, what's the handle?
My Instagram handle is just my name, just Ross Cullen with an underscore at the end.
Perfect.
Super easy
to find. Everyone can get on that. Watch the racing. And so how long does this season last? Is it like a season or?
So it's normally, you go from March until maybe August. But as we all know, who knows at the minute?
Yeah.
Things are getting pushed back more into winter and things are getting cancelled. So I'll just be grateful if we can have a few races this year. Then we'll be hopefully ready to go for 2022 as normal.
Well, there you go. Perfect. Thank you for coming in.
Thank you.
Thank you for speaking with me. It's been an absolute pleasure, and I'll see everyone else on the next episode of the Sports Champions Podcast. Bye-bye.